Let's go ahead and look into the material that we want to cover this evening. We've been looking at technology and how that both positively and negatively impacts the Christian life and how we can go about living the Christian life. We've looked at the significance and the nature of screens. We've looked at social media. Last week, we looked at the technology of the book. And now what we want to discuss is we want to talk about the access to information that we have through the internet. I think we can say that unlike any other age in the history of the church, we have access to billions and billions of pieces of data like no other age before. As of 2019, this is at least the most recent statistic, Google has scanned 40 million out of the world's 130 million books. We have access to all kinds of services that in years past, we might have had access to it because we knew about it locally, but now we have all sorts of access to all kinds of services and things. So there's all kinds of positives. I'm sure that most of you have probably used Airbnb. My wife likes us to use Airbnb. It makes me profoundly nervous, so I just leave that stuff up to her. I had a meeting and some colleagues were like, just take an Uber. And I'm like, I don't know if I want to do the Uber thing. I want a yellow car. I want it to say taxi. I want the person in there to tell me, I do this full time. I'm dedicated to this task. I had a friend who had an Uber ride where the guy picked him up in his pickup truck after work and it was all dirty and dusty. And he's like, oh yeah, I just do this part time. So I'm like, all right, I'm not so sure about Uber. If you're interested in tools, you can go to toolcrate.co. If you want clothes, you can sign up for Stitch Fix, where they will send you, you fill out this form, you tell them your colors, your interests, your personality, and then they will send you a box of clothes every month personally tailored for your personality. They're also bespokepost.com, where you, again, enter in your your particulars of your personality, and it gives you stuff. All of us, I'm sure, have gone to Amazon to buy all sorts of things. I know that many of you, if not most of you, can appreciate this. Amazon is the new Sears catalog. You'd go to the Sears catalog and they had just about all kinds of stuff. You could buy tools and clothes. And so you have Amazon, you have streaming services where you can rent all sorts of movies. And you can listen to all kinds of music. When Annika and I were getting ready to move to Mississippi, one of the things we did, and we did this almost every night for several months, is we would look at the latest real estate listings in the Jackson area, and then we would take all sorts of virtual tours. Let's take a virtual tour through this house. I've done this before, and this will show you partially how optimistic I can be, but at the same time, how much I'm a seven-year-old child inside here, in that I'll be laying in bed, and I'm, getting ready to go to bed, and I got my iPad there, and my wife's like, what are you looking at? And I said, I'm looking at used fighter jets. And she's like, what do you mean used fighter jets? Well, there's a MiG-15, a Russian fighter jet for sale here, and it's only $750,000. I'm thinking about saving up for it. And that's when I usually get the eye roll. And she's like, can you please turn out the lights? I get one of those. Well, all of this access to all sorts of things has many, many positives to it. It used to be that if I wanted to get a Christian book, you would go to the Christian book distributors catalog that came in the mail. But now, you type a few things online, either Amazon or any number of distributors, booksellers have all sorts of used and even brand new Christian books. You know, so there are many blessings that come along with this. You can research all sorts of things. You can shop for all sorts of things. There's all sorts of entertainment. So our access to all sorts of services and products and things is certainly a positive in many, many ways. However, what is true of our access to good and positive things is also true about our access to negative and even sinful things. And so what we want to do is we want to think about our access to some of these things, and then what we want to do is we want to think about what are ways that we can ensure that we are living the Christian life as best as we can in a Christ-honoring manner, in spite of the fact that we have what I would call unfettered access to evil. So, you know, when I was a kid, and I'm sure most of us in this room can identify with this, is that it used to be that you had to be brave, so to speak, in order to get access to pornography. You had to be willing to go to the corner store. You had to be willing to ask for it over the counter. You had to be willing to go to the bookstore. Well, now you can access it in the seclusion of your home. It's just a few mouse clicks away. Now, one of the things that I think many of us don't realize is actually how powerful this form of sinful media is, not simply as a form of media, but ultimately as an industry. It's a $60 billion a year industry that has a financial footprint that is as big as the country music industry. Now, to be sure, we don't want to, you know, isolate this problem and say that it is unique to our own, you know, time frame in history, and that pornography has been around for thousands of years. You can look in books about ancient history, and they often have statues and pictures and things, and so it's been around for a long time. But what the internet affords us at this point is it affords us ease of accessibility, affordability, it's often free, and then anonymity, in that where it used to require that you had to be willing to go into public to go get it and look the clerk in the eye to buy it, now you can be totally anonymous. What we may not realize even is how formative this particular industry has been in the development of the technology that we use. You know, I don't know if we're aware of this, but for example, let's take a step back, say a generation or so. I suspect most of us had video cassettes, VHS cassettes, where you would pop in the cassette and watch the movie. Well, if you remember when that technology first came out, there were two formats. There was the VHS format, and then there was the Betamax format. Sony brought out the Betamax format. The Sony format was superior in terms of its quality, in terms of its sound quality and picture quality, but you could only hold about an hour's worth of content on the Betamax, whereas on the VHS, you could hold at least 2 hours. If you slowed down the tape recording speed, you could hold up to 8 hours of content on the tape. The pornography industry picked the VHS format because they could put more content on it, and you forgot all about Betamax. It disappeared because of the influence of that one industry. Fast forward a little bit, and you had high definition DVD, and then you had Blu-ray. Why did Blu-ray beat out HD DVD? Because of the pornography industry. Why is it, and this is not necessarily the only reason, but it was pioneered by this industry, why do you now have high-speed internet access to the World Wide Web? Because of this industry. They lobbied to get high-speed lines into communities so that people could get ease of access to this content. Now, when we look more closely, say, for example, of how this has impacted the church, in some surveys that I've, you know, looked at a number of years ago, 9 out of 10 boys, 6 out of 10 girls have seen pornography by the time that they're 18. So this is a prevalent problem. Now, this is a number of years ago. Maybe some of you remember Promise Keepers rallies. These were men's rallies where you would fill up a stadium, say with as many as 50 to 60,000 men. And at one Promise Keepers rally, attended by tens of thousands, half of the men there revealed that they were engaged in the use of pornography. 50% of professing Christian men and 20% of Christian women are addicted to pornography, according to research statistics. And tragically, the most prevalent day for viewing it is Sunday. That's really bad, to say the least. Christianity Today conducted a survey that revealed that 57% of pastors surveyed and 64% of youth pastors were struggling with the use of pornography. Anecdotally, I had to deal with this situation in my own pastoral ministry. I had a young woman who was a member of our church, and she came to me asking me for advice because she was in the workplace, and when she went into a conference room for a meeting, she was a few minutes early to the meeting, one of her coworkers was there, and she saw the content that he was looking at, and it was sinful, to say the least. And so she said, "I'm not sure what to do." And I said, "Yeah, you ought to go ahead and report it to human resources, report it to HR. The man got fired. What compounded it is that he was a ruling elder in a NAPARC church, North American Reformed and Presbyterian churches. So I won't identify the denomination, but he was a ruling elder, and so he got fired, and he was the father of 4 children. In addition to this, I remember when I was doing some missionary teaching with Reformed Theological Seminary, and we were partnering with Campus Crusade for Christ. And I was talking with, I jokingly called him my handler because he filled all of my paperwork. He knew Chinese. He was gonna, he was gonna take me and my wife and show us the countryside and show us everything. So we were talking, and he said, "Yeah, sadly, we have to reject 60% of our male applicants because they are struggling with the use of pornography." Or perhaps in this case, we should say the abuse of pornography. All right, so what other types of access to evil might there be that we could recognize that's going on that might be challenges to the Christian life? Well, one of the things that it's in one sense, it can be entertaining. I remember lecturing once, and I said, the internet brings all kinds of interesting groups of people together. I said, I'd be willing to bet, and I hadn't researched it, and I haven't looked at it since, but I'd be willing to bet you can find a squirrel lovers club or clubs on the internet. And so one of my students was like, "You're right, there are squirrel lovers clubs out there." So you're like, okay, that's fascinating. For every niche kind of interest, you're going to find something out there. In this one book that I read, and I'm not necessarily knocking the series, but this author said, and I think there's a point to it, that she said, the reason why the Harry Potter series by J.K. Rowling was such a huge phenomenon in our culture was because it was one of the first series that was published in the age of the internet, so that it was not simply just regular standard advertising or word of mouth, but word about the stories could spread very quickly over the internet, over social media, and that picked up the series and caused it to take off. Okay, so you have access to all of these kinds of unique niche things. Well, remember, I'm not going to say that the ratio is 1-to-1, but we could say at least, observationally, it seems like for every one good thing that you can find on the internet, there's an equally opposite bad thing that you can find out there. And in this case, I want to tell you a small story, and this is a true story. My children, when we were living on the West Coast, after church, they would go out onto the lawn of the church, and one or two of the kids would bring a tennis ball. And while everybody was, gathering around and they were, talking after church, what the kids would do is they would all go to one end of the grass field or the grass yard, and then one kid would take the ball and throw it up in the air. And as it would sail up in the air, then the clog of kids would try, somebody would try to catch the ball to see if they could catch it. And then that kid who caught the ball would then get to go and go up to the front of the group, and then they would throw it. So just a simple, childhood game. Okay, so my kids played with one of these children. And over the years, this child grew up and became a teenager. And then all of a sudden, we get a text from the pastor at the church that said, we have to alert you to the fact that one of the members of our church has committed murder. I won't go into much of the details, but it was this kid who was playing with my kids, throwing the ball up in the air. He ended up killing one and shooting two others as he went into a synagogue and shot it up. And when the news media got a hold of information and got a hold of a manifesto of sorts that he had written, it turns out that he had spent inordinate amounts of time on the internet on conspiracy sites, as well as on sites that essentially promoted anti-Semitism. And so this was the mind-boggling thing, and we'll talk about this in greater detail in the next few minutes in terms of the principle behind it. But what I found mind-boggling is that you had an individual who completely turned away from the flesh and blood people in his life and gave his heart, if you will, and his mind to unnamed people and bodies, if you will, on the other side of the screen that he had never seen, never met, and had never encountered before in the real world. And yet he was soaking in everything that they had to say. One of the things I think we have to be alert to the fact in terms of, it used to be that when a stranger talked to you, your parents, if they were close by, were quick to grab you and haul you away. Or as a kid, my parents would always tell us, don't talk to strangers. You just never know. You stay clear of them. And, and in my time growing up as a kid, I don't know if this was the case ever in Mississippi, but I grew up a lot of time on the West Coast. It was the time during the ubiquitous white van kidnappings. I don't know how many times that kind of a story came up. Oh, the kidnappers, they took the child and they drove away in a white van. I can't tell you, I've heard that story a number of years, over the years. And I think it's just because white vans are one of the most manufactured vehicles in the country, so people often see them in many places. It's not necessarily that kidnappers only drive white vans. But, stay away from strangers. Well, what you have in the internet now is you have an open door where all sorts of strangers can get access to the people in your life, or vice versa, that the people in your life can surreptitiously, innocuously, without much thought to it, get access to all sorts of strangers that you would never let anyone in your family talk to in a million years because of safety concerns. And yet now they've got a window into your home. Now we might think, well, surely, okay, in this case, you're describing a young teenage man, a young man who is, you know, swept away by lies. Well, sadly, in my presbytery, there was a very young, gifted church planter. I was envious and am envious still of his ability to evangelize and to strike up conversations with people at the drop of a hat. And I thought, man, this is just a gift that I wish I possessed. You know, part of it is the way I describe it, is that my son, my oldest son, some of you know him, you know, tall kid, lots of hair, he's like a Labrador puppy with a tennis ball. He's like, hey, you want to play? My middle son is more like me. I'm like a skittish cat. I skirt the edges of the room, and I'm like, yeah, I don't know. There's a lot of people in here. This is making me nervous. I think I'm going to just, you know, scoot on right outside the door. You know, so I'm envious of this guy because, boy, he's just so natural at telling people about Christ, and he was planning a church. And then I come to presbytery one meeting to find out that we're going to be divesting him from office. And I said, well, what happens is, as this unfolded on the floor of presbytery, and it was a public meeting, so I'm not speaking out of school, is that he had gotten wrapped up in an online chat group that discussed doctrine, and he had essentially denied the eternality of hell. And he was what you call, he became an annihilationist, that the wicked do not dwell eternally in the presence of God's wrath, as the scriptures teach, but rather they're all destroyed after a period of time. And I was dumbfounded, because yet once again, you have somebody who's been trained theologically, somebody who the church recognized this person has gifts for service and ministry to the church, and yet he has turned away from the flesh and blood people in his life, and he's given his heart and his mind over to voices on the other side of a screen. And by voices, I mean written voices, not audible voices. Okay? All right, now, on the one hand, we can say, okay, this is all kind of very easily observable. You know, if we're talking pornography, if we're talking hatred, if we're talking false doctrine. But how about this? How about if I make us all a little bit uncomfortable and we get a little bit closer to home now? Because we might say, well, yeah, definitely that's all wrong. How often, I think, do we imbibe of evil without even realizing that we're taking it in? Because we have access to all sorts of information. What if the evil takes on a mundane kind of pedestrian form? What if we're imbibing from something that is ultimately demonic, but we don't even realize that it's such because it's so mundane and ordinary? Now, we know of Christ's interactions with demons, and thus we have to acknowledge their existence. It's clear teaching in the Bible. But I think in the West, a lot of people don't often think of the demonic, let alone their existence or their influence. But demons are real, even if we don't encounter them. Or do we? And that I don't think that at least these days we're going to, you know, walk around a corner and find the devil in a red suit with horns carrying a pitchfork. I mean, if that's the way it's going to be, then you'd be like, oh, you know, I see the devil. Okay, I'm going to steer clear. I'm going to go on the other side of the street. I'm going to avoid this thing. But here's where I think that the demonic can often be present in certain forms of entertainment that we find on the internet, and we may not realize it. It was St. Augustine, the church father, who lived in the 4th and 5th centuries, that he charged the politicians of Rome with corruption because he said that they gave the people of Rome and of the empire what they called the spectacle entertainments. And this was essentially the gladiator contests, where arenas throughout the Roman Empire had gladiator contests where you would have gladiators go into the arena and fight to the death. You could, you know, Augustine said you could hear the crowds roaring and cheering as they would go in to fight one another. Sometimes it would be something as innocuous as hunting animals. Now, mind you, there's a distinction between, I think, hunting for sport and hunting for entertainment. In other words, let's just watch this animal die and die cruelly. Those are two different things. Sometimes there would be mass executions in the arenas. And what Augustine said about this is that this form of entertainment promoted the idea that life was cheap. And he says that it turned death and violence into a form of entertainment. He says, quote, "For such demons are pleased with the frenzy of the games, with the cruelty of the amphitheater, with the violent contests of those who undertake the strife of controversy. By acting this way, pagans offer incense to demons in their hearts." And I think he's right. I think he's right. Now, keep this in mind. Under the veil of the commonplace activity of going to the arenas where you watch these violent games unfold, this was something that was common. It was widespread, and it was ordinary. And if you looked at it from the surface, you would say, I don't see the demonic here. Everybody's doing it. It's so common. But Augustine saw through the facade. He wanted to know, what is it that's motivating people to do these things? What is it that they're cheering? If they're cheering death, if they're cheering violence, then he said, these are things of the enemy. This is demonic. And so here would be the question that I would want to pose to us, given our access to all sorts of things through the internet, is that what is it in our own culture that seems utterly mundane and ordinary, but nevertheless pulsates with the demonic? I think that for a lot of forms of entertainment out there, there is bloodlust is still a thing. You know, maybe it's just a generational thing. I don't know. You know, but the older that I get, I begin comparing forms of entertainment. You know, I can do the cliche one. The cliche one is the music that my kids listen to is garbage. That's an easy one to say. You know, it's just like, you know, Dad, don't you like this? I'm like, no, not really. Right? But when I look at some movie trailers, I watch a trailer and I think, that just looks like utterly gratuitous violence for no reason whatsoever other than purely for entertainment. And if you can get access to that, stream that through the internet, the question is it looks mundane, it looks like it's a form of entertainment, but what is it celebrating? What is it promoting? And it could very well be that it's promoting something that is ultimately demonic. You know, it's slick, it's shiny, it's been given a great degree of respectability. What about video games, for example, that promote violence? You know, when my kids were growing up, they don't play video games so much anymore. Instead, since moving here to Mississippi, they like to sit beneath trees and shoot at turkeys. that's a totally different thing that now they're into, which I'm like, all right, that's fine. Dad, can you take us? I'm like, I wouldn't know how to do it. You know, I'm sorry. That's totally new to me. But my kids would play this one game, Minecraft, right? And it's a game that's just made up of blocks. It's a block world where you're a block character. You build block houses. There are block mountains. There are block people. There are block animals. It's just blocks. But I found out that my young son, one of them at the time, I'll let you guys try to figure out which one, that I found out that one of my young sons was going in the game, and in the block villages, he was killing all of the villagers, burning down the blockhouses, and stealing all of their stuff. And when I found out about this, I was like, all right, you're not going to be able to play this game if that's how you're going to play it. Why not, Dad? It's just a game. They're blocks. I said, because we don't practice or try to simulate sin. That is, it's just that simple. So how many of the games that our kids or our grandchildren are using, do they encourage us in our thought life to engage in sin or to think about doing sin, or even worse yet, to practice sinful things? You know, here's another one. And I try to, you know, sometimes they're funny and sometimes I think maybe I shouldn't be watching these, but there's a whole series of videos out there called Fail Army. And it's on YouTube, and the Fail Army videos are all about, it's just a, like a 20-minute collection, and there's dozens of them out there, 20-minute collection of people falling, tripping, slipping, you know, breaking things, you know, hitting their heads. Yeah, they just do all sorts of things. And I start to think sometimes as I see my, I've seen my kids watching that, I think, all right, that's funny, but should we be laughing at people's accidents? Okay. There was a series of videos when I was a kid, and I won't mention them by name. Some of you may be aware of what it was, but it featured animals and people and things dying. And at the time, if you wanted to get access to this, you had to pass around the video cassette. Well, now it's available online, and you can get it. You can get access. And as of one look at, I went to do the research to find out, yes, it's online. Yes, it's available. And at the time that I looked, 1.2 million views. Now, keep this in mind. I'm not condemning all forms of online entertainment, but we should ask the question, I've got access to all kinds of stuff. What am I watching? Why am I watching it? What am I listening to? Why am I listening to it? What am I reading? And why am I reading it? And so what we want to do with the time that remains is we want to see if we can address these issues and having this access to evil. And that in a sin-fallen world, I think people can take good things that God has created, sexuality, life, entertainment, and those types of things, they take them and they turn them upside down so that they end up exchanging the truth of God for a lie. Sexuality becomes perverted. People celebrate death instead of recognizing that it is our great enemy. People embrace false doctrine rather than listening to the collective wisdom of the church. People imbibe from hatred rather than instilling the love of Christ in their hearts through the gospel and through the word of God. So how are we to respond to this situation? Well, I would say that it requires discernment, detachment, and contentment. I couldn't do the alliteration. I so bad. I almost wanted to call up David and say, do you have a third D here that I could use? I am so terrible at alliteration. But let's start with discernment. The Apostle Paul says this in Philippians 4:8, finally, brothers, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is commendable, if there is any excellence, if there is anything worthy of praise, think about these things. So ask yourself this. Ask yourself whether it's in the things that you see, the things that you watch, the things that you read, the things that you buy, you know, the information that you get access to on the internet, does all of that bring out the best in you, or does it bring out the worst in you? You know, a simpler way to ask this question, and it's maybe touches much more closer to home, is does it make you want to be a better student of Scripture? Does it make you want to be kinder and to love your enemies? You know, does it make you want to know Christ better? You know, and I think what this means is that as you sift through the internet, it requires a hearty knowledge of God's law and a heavy dose of wisdom. So, you know, so take a look at the larger catechism and how it explains the law of God, both in the things that we can do and the things that we shouldn't do. But then you have to pray to the Lord to give you wisdom, because it used to be, this is the way it used to work. It used to be that you would often have temptation, but you would have no opportunity. And then sometimes you would have opportunity, but you would have no temptation. But woe unto you when temptation and opportunity meet. Well, now through the internet, it can meet quite easily. You don't have to go very far. And it used to be that, well, you had to be on your computer. Well, now all you had to do is be on your phone, and you can carry your phone anywhere. So this means that it requires us to know the law of God, to study it well, to know what is pleasing in His sight, and then to pray for God-given wisdom to know whether we should be using something, reading something, watching something, or consuming something on the internet. I've been studying Stephen Sharnock's work, The Existence and Attributes of God. These are heavy doorstop tomes. They are, you know, it's like 1,800 pages. I think somebody told me that it was like 550,000 words in these books. The Bible's 750,000 words, so nearly as long as the Bible, about two-thirds of the Bible. But it's all about the attributes and existence of God. And it's kind of scary because these were sermons. Some of these sermons are 200 pages long. If you think Pastor Strain speaks a long time in church when he preaches, you ain't seen nothing yet. So one of the things he said about this, it's just been sitting upon my mind, and I've been, you know, trying to pickle my mind in this, is that what he says is the law of God is a transcript of God's very being. Another way we could put this is that the law of God is a transcript of God's very own heart. What is He like? Well, if you want to know what He's like, then study His law. And it's not as a ladder to climb to heaven, but rather it's to know what is good, acceptable, and pleasing in His sight. Think about the Old Testament tabernacle, the temple. Where did God command them to put the Israelites? Where did He command the Israelites to put the law, a copy of the law? Anybody remember? Inside the ark. I could have told Indiana Jones, no need to open it. I already know what's in there. The law of God, think of it. A copy of the law of God resided in the very heart of the throne of God in the Holy of Holies. Doesn't that tell you something about the nature of God's law? And if this is the case, how much should we meditate upon it? How much should we study it? And that is going to be the guardrails to help us navigate through this life in which we live, where we have unfettered access to all sorts of things. So discernment. We have to pray for discernment. Secondly, we need to pray for the power to become detached. The power to become detached. Pornography, flat and simple, is just sinfully wrong. Matthew 5:28, Jesus says, "But I say to you that everyone who looks at a woman with lustful intent has already committed adultery with her in his heart." Now, the negative effects of pornography have been well documented. It's not only, and I'm not exaggerating when I say this, it is destructive to the mind. It will rewire your brain, which then causes physical problems. We could go into those details, but we can talk about it offline. But it can be mentally, physically, and spiritually destructive. And so that means if it's something like that, then we have to do everything that we can to detach ourselves from it. What does Jesus say in the very next verse? "If your right eye causes you to sin, tear it out and throw it away. For it's better that you lose one of your members than that your whole body be thrown into hell." So how do we detach from something like that? Or how do we detach from things like hate websites? How do we detach from things like websites that feature bad doctrine? Well, maybe consider getting a dumb phone. I'm serious, you know, when I say that. I know that more and more of these devices that we carry have become more and more interwoven with our lives in all sorts of ways. I was telling my wife, I'm so irritated at my bank. Because now, in order to log into my account, I have to have two-factor authentication. Well, where do they send the message? Well, to my phone, which means that I have to carry this dumb thing around with me if possibly think that I might need access to my bank account. And all sorts of websites now have that. Oh, we'll send it to you to your phone. So maybe get a dumb phone. They even sell dumb phones. They just receive basic text messages and that's it. You can maybe do something like that. But here's another one. This is an important aspect of the Christian life, is being in fellowship with the body of Christ, being in regular contact with flesh and blood people in your life. Ask the people in your life, the people that you trust, would you please be an accountability partner for me? Would you help me? That you have the right, you can call me in a second and say, let me see your phone, let me see your computer, let me see your search history, to hold you accountable. We should open ourselves to that. If the Apostle Paul in Colossians 3 says that we should confess our sins to one another, then this would be one of the ways that we would do that. And for you parents, and even grandparents, this is what I would tell you. You tell those children and grandchildren, this is my internet connection. You will not get access to it unless you understand that I have full and complete access to your device, and at any time, I can inspect it and I can see what you're doing on it. And if you ever see this, you walk into the room and the kid's like, grab it out of their hands and start looking. Start looking. That's one of the things I admire about my wife. My wife should have been a police detective. You know, she's like, you know, I'm not kidding. She'll be laying there in bed, and it's like, I'm half asleep, and she's like, my spidey senses are tingling. I'm going to go upstairs and check on the kids. And lo and behold, sometimes she's thinking, what are you doing awake? It's nearly midnight. I was just coding. Be aggressive when it comes to holding our kids accountable in these areas. Cut off access to whatever enables and encourages you to sin. Stop reading websites that promote hate or evil or conspiracies or bad news. Stop playing video games that encourage us to simulate or mentally practice sin. Engage the creation. Engage the people around you. You know, I think that one of the reasons why this minister or this young man embraced very bad ideas, to put it mildly, is because they probably couldn't conceive of sitting across face to face in front of somebody and telling them what they were thinking. It was easier to look into the impersonal screen and embrace bad ideas, sinful ideas. And so in this sense, we should be involved with the people in our lives, with your children or grandchildren. Say, let's go out. Let's talk. Let me take you out for an ice cream, and let's leave the phones at home. Or, you know, if you yourself are struggling with something, find somebody that you trust and say, hey, can I bounce some ideas off of you that I've been thinking about? And talk to somebody that is older, that is wiser, that has more experience. So discernment, detachment, and then last but not least, contentment. I think that because we have unfettered access to all sorts of evil, I think we have to be aware that what lies at the root cause of our willingness to dally in evil is because there's a lack of contentment in our hearts. We have a lack of contentment in Christ. What the psalmist says in Psalm 107, verse 9, he satisfies the longing of the soul and the hungry soul he fills with good things. You know, one of the things that I think that our materialistic, narcissistic, you know, idolatrous world tells us is this will satisfy, and it rarely does. So we want more, or we want the next thing. And instead, what is it that Christ tells us? I'm the manna from heaven that will satisfy your hunger and quench your thirst. In other words, the way to think about this is that we have to not simply flee from the evil as much as we should, You know, that's one part of the sanctification equation. Flee from whatever is evil. But remember what Paul said there in Philippians 4:8, to think about whatever was true, whatever was just, whatever was pure, whatever was lovely, whatever was commendable. Think on these things. It's not a question of merely fleeing, but it's a question of fleeing away from sin and fleeing to Christ. Filling up ourselves with what is good rather than with what is evil. Displacing what is evil with what is good. You know, my silly way of doing this is sometimes when my wife's not looking, she knows this mostly, but when my wife's not looking, I'll do the dishes. And I have to say when my wife's not looking, because often she'll be like, she'll pick it up, this still has stuff on it. I'm like, no, it doesn't. Yeah, it does. Right? See right there? You need to wash that again. So if I can wash the dishes and put them away before she sees anything, then I can blame the kids for it. It's like, well, I don't know. That must have been the kids doing the dishes. And I won't look so that I can genuinely be ignorant as to whether or not I washed it or not. I'm confessing my sin to you. But what I do is I've discovered that when I take a glass, and let's say I've washed it or it's a water bottle, and it gets soap in it. I used to do the thing where I fill it up, pour it out, fill it up, pour it out, fill it up, pour it out. I'm like, man, this thing still has suds in it. And I would do this four or five times. But I found that if you just set the bottle on the bottom of the sink, put the water spout into it, and you fill it up with water, and all of a sudden you see the bubbles go, and the bubbles rise, and they just pour right out of the cup. I was like, man, why didn't I know that before? That saved me all kinds of time. I think before my wife probably thought I was playing with the dishes. That's the picture of our sanctification. We take the fountain of the grace of God in Christ and we pour it into our hearts until it displaces the evil and it leaves no room for anything else. This is the way that Thomas Chalmers wrote about this, the expulsive power of a new affection. He says, the love of the world cannot be expunged by a mere demonstration of the world's worthlessness, but may it not be supplanted by the love of that which is more worthy than itself? In other words, it's not enough to say, oh, that's bad. What we have to say to ourselves and to the people in our lives is, that's bad. Let me show you something that is infinitely better. Let me show you something that is breathtakingly beautiful. Let me show you something that will satisfy like nothing else in this created world can. The object of the gospel, he says, is both to pacify the sinner's conscience and to purify his heart. And it is of importance to observe that what mars the one of these objects mars the other also. The best way of casting out an impure affection is to admit a pure one and by the love of what is good to expel the love of what is evil. If we fall more in love with Christ, we will simply walk past the evil that we have access to, but we will smile and say, I have no interest in you because my heart is full of affection and devotion for Christ. There's no room. There's no room. So technology has given us great access, but great access to both good and evil. And I think we have to scripturally be equipped to discern how we proceed with using these technologies, in this case, the internet. We have to be willing to detach ourselves from evil things and even the seemingly mundane. And in the end, we should pray that the Lord, above all else, would give us a contentment in Christ.